Welcome to Combat Sports Talk, a podcast dedicated to UFC and Bellator discussion, the MMA community, and combat sports in general. I'm your host, Ryan Smith, and joining me this week is Kelechi KC Onyebuchi.
Hello, gentlemen.
All right. And the man with the keys to victory, John Keys.
Yes, like I said, Taco Tuesday. What's up?
Yeah. So normally we do the show on Monday, but you know, we had to accommodate certain schedules, and so we did. And I was glad to do it because I was tired last night anyway. So thank you for needing to push to today. But I think we're gonna have a good show. People are asking, where is George G Money Stallworth? We believe he is going to make an appearance at some point tonight. We just don't know when. And I don't know why I can hear myself.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Kelechi is doing something right now, trying to do something. And so,
is he trying to bootleg our broadcast?
He's doing something. Mm-hmm. Look at the face. Look at his face. You can see he's like trying to do something. Because the moment I said I can hear myself, you saw him start touching buttons.
No, I think it just randomly came through yours. I don't know why the microphone's picking you up. So all I just lowered all my volume.
Okay. All right. We're cool. Let's get into it. This is like fight 2 weeks, because at Fight Island, there was a fight on Saturday night, a fight on Wednesday night, another fight on Saturday night, and then there's a fight on this coming Saturday night. So we've, over the course of 2 weeks, we've had four cards. Two of them were in the past week. And so we're going to cover that in a segment we like to call the fight card. All right, this is the official decision. We got to change the run sheet because I'm gonna read the run sheet and be like, it's the fight card. This is the official decision. This is where we look at the results from the fights on Wednesday and Saturday night. So Wednesday was Cater versus Ige. This was Wednesday, July 15th, 2020, at Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. There were five fights on the card. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan lost his fight to Munir Lazez be a unanimous decision. Thank you, sir. Let's see. Talia Santos defeated Molly McCann via unanimous decision. Cody Stamann lost his fight by unanimous decision to Jimmy Rivera. And in the co-main event, we had Tim Elliott versus Ryan Babyface Benoit. He is the hometown hero here for us in Dallas-Fort Worth. And so this was a great moment for him. I mean, not only is he a local guy, but he is at Fight Island fighting in a co-main event of, you know, a major UFC show. And he put on a great fight. But unfortunately, he lost via unanimous decision 29-28, 2-1 to Tim Elliott. Tim Elliott has one of the most unorthodox styles. But he's a great grappler. He's a great jiu-jitsu specialist, and he's got good stand up. So while Benoit was the stronger of the two, he threw some huge punches. Unfortunately, as we got closer to the end of the round, you could see that it was Tim Elliott that was going to emerge victorious. Shout out to Ryan Benoit, though. We got your back on this one, and we look forward to seeing you fight again in the UFC. In the main event of the evening, Calvin Kattar defeated Dan Ige via unanimous decision, 49-46 and 48-47. It was a great fight. Dan Ige is game, but Calvin Kattar is the real deal.
Did anyone pick Ige for this fight?
I picked Ige for this fight.
You would. This is why I never bet with Ryan.
Except for UFC 251, because I got them all right. Every one of them.
Here we go.
Yes, queen.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Who got them all right?
It's the man we all know and love.
Ryan.
Exactly. No love for that.
Nobody was going to say that.
So Calvin Kattar, just, I am looking for big things from him. You know, I was very impressed when I saw his debut. He lost the fight, and I got kind of disillusioned from him, but he's coming back nice and strong. I still like Dan Ige, though. You know, those fighters that are coming from, I don't know if they're all from the same camp in Hawaii, but, you know, when you got fighters like Max Holloway, you got fighters like Dan Ige, and some of these other these other Hawaiian fighters, they name one that's not game. That's all I got to say.
Interesting how the two you just named didn't win.
But they're
still
the
game fighters. Yes, they. Okay.
They're gonna fight. That is one thing that if you say anything about that island, they got some scrappers there. Okay, yep. Rachel Ostrovich.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Oh yeah.
I don't really like her as a fighter.
Yeah. BJ Penn, Max Holloway. All the way back to.
Let's see how far back you can go.
Wilson, hold on. I gotta get Wilson Correa. His nickname was Cabbage. Okay, dude was from Hawaii. He took some serious blows, and he just kept coming. People were scared. People think that he was the first CTE. Okay, as many hits as he used to take. Give me a second here, and I will find him because he was BJ Penn's. Protege. Let's see here. Cannot find him.
Ooh. All right. Well, while you look for that,
go ahead. Continue.
Stump the chump over here.
Yeah. I think I got it.
I know you don't.
Here's one you left out.
Who's that?
Kendall Grove.
Oh, the spider. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He's still fighting, believe it or not. Still fighting.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, he was one that was on the Ultimate Fighter 3 that I used to follow. And you know, he had a great run in the UFC and then just started losing, and then he was out. But still, and we're not even talking about, like, I mean, there's a lot of great Hawaiian fighters. I just can't come up with their names right now. Who else? Help me out, crowd that's watching. Who else from Hawaii?
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Travis Hopper Brown. Travis Brown.
Oh, 18-7. Okay. That is an exception.
Hold on. We're not. And yes, I did. Wesley Cabbage Correa. Okay. That was his name. Here's another one. Okay. KJ Nunes. Brad Tavares.
Yeah. Brad Kendall, Tavares was the one I was trying to remember.
Yes. Kendall the Spider Grove. Mm-hmm. Kimo Leopoldo. Very important, okay, and his name comes up for a reason, and as we'll talk about in a little bit later. Just another one, Yancy Medeiros. He's also Yancy another Hawaiian fighter.
Yes, Yancy Medeiros.
Yes. Let's see here. I'm looking down here. Those are pretty much the major ones. Uh-huh. Okay, there's a top 30 here that I could throw out there, but yeah. Those are your most famous.
But the ones I was kind of coming up with, the Yancy Medeiros and Brad Tavares. Those were the two. Travis Brown is an exception. I don't, you know, he was the person that I said when Chet Congo left the UFC that it was Travis Brown that was going to step into that gatekeeper, aka welcome mat position.
How dare you? Don't you ever speak ill of Chet Congo again. That man held it down for the heavyweight position and is arguably the best heavyweight to ever step into a UFC octagon.
I don't know who you'd be arguing with on that one, because there is no one who would even dignify that position as legitimate.
I think there's a whole nation that would deny you on that one, right?
France.
Rose's fiance/boyfriend, husband.
Oh, Pat Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe Pat Barry might have something to say about that whole Czech Congo thing.
Pat Barry would roll that back in a second. He would want that. The reason why they haven't had a rematch is because Czech Congo is still running. He got away with that win.
Still running and he is the show still running. Over at Bellator? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Running the show. When was the last time? When was the last time he fought? He fought, got poked in the eye, and quit.
Yeah. That's what happens when you get poked in the eye.
Yeah.
You make it sound like he ran away from a fight.
Well, then how come every John Jones opponent stays in the ring and fights? Don't just quit.
Because they are ready to die. Like Lionheart.
I don't know what point you're trying to make.
There. Pokes in the eye, you know, that's the thing, right? It's like Czech Congo, you scratch his nose and now he's wounded. He's got to get a Band-Aid. You know, real fighters.
To his face, though.
Listen, I've seen his record. He just looks impressive.
Oh my!
I won't make the mistake that Pat Barry made. That's all.
Oh yeah, because you won't get the ring with him.
I'll speak French to Czech Congo. That's what I'll do.
D'accord.
Oui. D'accord.
Prove it.
Right. Prove it.
Anyway,
we digress. Hopefully, you guys are enjoying the banter here. But Dan Ige is another one of those Hawaiian fighters that are really just holding it down for the island. Small island, big fighters, big hearts. He's just another one of those guys. Let's go to the next fight. This was on Saturday. This was UFC on ESPN 13. Figueroa versus Benavidez. Saturday, July 18th at Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. Five fights on the card. Askar Askarov versus Alexander Pantoja. Askarov defeated Pantoja via unanimous decision, 2-1 or 29-28. Luana Carolina versus Arion Lipsky. Lipsky defeated Carolina via submission knee bar in the first round. So, John, I know that you were impressed by that knee bar. I saw a photo of it, and I had to hold my lunch down.
That whole fight was pretty impressive, even though it lasted all of a minute 28. It was pretty much Luana had put Ariana into a what you call a calf slicer. For those who have ever never seen what a calf slicer is, I believe they do it in wrestling, but just look it up. It's not pretty. Don't look up the WWE version. Look up the actual MMA or wrestling version. It is not a fun thing. If you just to simulate, get your broomstick and put it between right there at the bend of the knee and just sit on it. All right. That's and you'll understand pain. Okay. Anyway, so
I can't really imagine that. You may have to show us.
Me not think so. Okay. Me not think so. Okay. So regardless, so Luana had her in the calf slicer. Only thing she had to do was pull her back to her back, and it probably would have been a submission for Luana. However, Arion was calm and composed enough to keep herself right. She kind of shifted her weight so she can put Luana on her back. Once she did that, she kind of reached down, was like, oh, look at this leg. And she reached down and she kind of looked over at a corner for a second, like, hey, check this out. And she reclined Luana's leg into the ouch position. And I mean, when I say that knee went like this way in a position that shouldn't have, it went that way and it was a done deal. And the look that she had when she did it was like, I'm taking this leg home. This leg is mine now. And it was brutal. And man. You know, so regardless, they call her the queen of violence. All right. And for a reason. Her trainer is Chris Cyborg. All right. So I say she is trained in Muay Thai and she also has a Brazilian black belt under I forgot the guys who gave it to her, the team that gave it to her. Regardless, in my opinion, I've seen her fight before. And I thought it was a fluke the first time. I'm seeing a definite pattern here. Valentina Shevchenko has her opponent, okay, and Arion Lipsky. Keep an eye out for her, okay? She is going to be the next big threat.
All right. You heard it here first. Mark DeKessy lost his fight to Rafael Fiziev. Did I get it right?
Fiziev.
Fiziev. Fiziev. Defeated Mark Dukeski. Now look at that. I got Fiziev, but I didn't get Dukeski. There you go. Via unanimous decision, 30-27 and 2-29-28. In the co-main event, Kelvin Gastelum lost a disappointing submission to Jack Hermanson with a heel hook at 1 minute and 18 seconds in the first round. I don't think that that didn't make the buffer factor.
It did not. And it was kind of, I want to say it was, you know, me not being a fighter, and I hate to sound like an armchair quarterback, but it seemed like it was a rookie mistake. Because most of the time when you get into a heel hook position, you're supposed to explode out of it. Otherwise, if a person is really good on a really good ground game, they're going to hold on to it, and they're gonna twist it in the wrong position. This seemed to be one of those situations where Gastelum was lazily trying to get out of it, but Hermanson was like, "Nah, bro, we got business down here," and proceeded to keep him on there. And it was rookie. It was real rookie. I hate to say it like that.
Well, you know, for those of you who are listening, you know, these are our opinions of watching fights over many, many, many years. You know, for me, I've been watching fights over a decade. And, you know, these are our opinions. But we still do have the belief that the man in the arena, or in other cases, the person in the arena, you know, deserves our respect. And so just because we're critiquing and talking about what we saw doesn't mean that we have any less respect for Kelvin Gastelum and what he has accomplished in his career. So
I have the utmost respect for both. Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I have the utmost respect for both fighters. Both fighters came in their game. I was looking for a long fight. I think I actually had them in a decision because I know they're both that evenly matched. So a slight mistake on either one's part was going to cost them, and it did this night. And I feel bad for Gastelum because you could just see that he realized that he made a mistake there, and it was heartbreaking.
And we know what kind of fighter he is. We know that he is one of those fighters that, you know, that can take someone like Jack Hermanson, who's working his way up the ladder.
Yeah,
you know, Kelvin Gastelum has fought for the title, and you know, he's gone toe to toe with Izzy Adesanya, and so when you see a fighter like that lose in a way that is unexpected, it is disappointing. And he even expressed that in the media that, like, you know, this was really disappointing for him, and that, you know, he's going to come back better and stronger, and, you know, that's what you expect from a fighter to fight. And even whenever the outcome of the fight doesn't go their way, that a fighter fights again.
Always.
All right. In the main event of the evening, Davidson Figueroa defeated Joseph Benavidez via submission night time at 4:48 in round one.
This was okay. So when I first joined this group, this podcast, I used a couple of terms. One of them was anger beat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when both fighters are just so mad at each other that that all sorts of technicality was going to go out the window, and they're just going to fight. And this was one of those anger beatings. This was actually a part two. The first fight was for the flyweight championship as well. However, Figueredo came in overweight. Mm-hmm. So it was Benavidez's fight to win. However, there was a headbutt and a very zeroed in punch that kind of from Figueredo that pretty much ended that. And Benavidez has been on a tear ever since. He said that, you know, Figueredo was what was the reason why he got that headbutt, and, you know, he's wanting to get back in. He wants to hurt him. He wants to hurt him. And Figueredo was like, no, that's not how it happened. If you watch how he fights, he closed his eyes and went head first. And it was him that caused that. So needless to say, he was like, you know, I'm just gonna beat this guy. You know, but he was like, hey, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to tear him apart. We're going to do what we do. And sure enough, Figueredo came in there and he beat him, okay? He beat him like a government mule. He beat him.
Is that a phrase?
Yes. Yes.
That's it's a phrase.
He beat him badly, okay? He knocked him down, I think, 3 times. And then, you know, he just – and the last time he went, they actually went down, he went in there and he tried to get the choke on him. And, you know, it was like he tried and he didn't get it. He tried it the second time and he got it. I mean, it was deep in there. And they sat there, and I hate it when people say, oh, this person has never had this happen to him before, because that tells me it's about to happen. And, you know, Benavidez has never been choked out before. And within seconds of saying that, yeah, surprise, he was out. Okay, he was out. It was so bad that Megan O'Leary was supposed to his wife.
Yeah.
She was over there kneeled down right next to the cage watching him.
Wait, they're married?
Yes.
Didn't know that, did you? Yeah.
And
you're saying I don't have a chance.
And she's taller than him when she wears heels. So
I thought she was taller than him, period.
you know, that image of him sitting on the stool after he has been resuscitated and her kneeling next to the cage, trying to talk some, you know, trying to be there for her man is a poignant photo, because he is dejected and she's just trying to be like, yo, I'm still here for you. And then the meme started. Now, have you seen the memes?
No, I've not seen the meme, and I don't mean to laugh. Because, you know, it's heartbreaking, because there is nothing. It's one thing to be defeated. It's another thing to be defeated and your girlfriend is there. It's a third thing to be defeated with your wife there. And she's like, baby, it's going to be okay. That is what makes a man like dies off
Brian, the game. When I beat you.
It hasn't happened yet. Like,
I don't remember.
It hasn't happened yet, and that's the crazy thing. I don't know. I really should ask, what was it like for me to beat you? What was it like for you to hand me a belt?
My wife was in the crowd.
I know.
I'll tell you this. It was not a Megan O'Leary moment. I was greeted with a "You suck." So yeah, that's what that was like.
So the meme started, and so what it is people have been putting Davidson Figueroa's face over Joseph Benavidez's face in pictures where Benavidez is with Olivi. So you got Benavidez there with his wife, and it's like it shows a picture of him with his wife, and then it shows a second frame, and then it's Davidson Figueroa's face over Benavidez, like, I took your woman. so you know, it's
cold-blooded for that.
The internet knows no limits, no shame. They are ruthless all day, every day.
Undefeated, yeah.
But you know, an emotional Joseph Benavidez says he has one more fight in him. He says he's not going out like that. I'm concerned because I don't know who else he's going to fight. Like, who else is there left in 125 that he can fight that can't beat him?
Well, it's not just that. If I do remember correctly, he's beaten a who's who. It's not who is left that he can beat. It's who's left that he hasn't beaten. That's the better question. He's actually, you know, the only person that seems to have his number is...
No, there's someone else, and it's the person that Figueroa is gunning for next. The one guy he can't have.
The person that's not there anymore is
Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. That's who he wants. But Demetrius Johnson is over in 1FC now. He is gone. Yeah. He left the UFC. But that is the only guy that I think can give Figueroa some level of satisfaction about whether or not he's the greatest or not. Because the fact is that, as far as I'm concerned, Henry Cejudo did not win the 125-pound belt from Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius Johnson has so many more title defenses. He is the de facto greatest of all time at 125.
Actually, there is somebody that he can fight.
Who's that?
There is Pettis. Sergio Pettis.
No, that's that.
Seriously, he Sergio Pettis beat him.
Excited about that fight, or is it a fight that just could happen?
It's a fight that he needs to happen so he can retire. I mean, he wants one more fight. So, yeah, put him in there with Sergio Pettis and hope to God that you win that fight. Because if you don't, you're going to have to go out on your sword, on your shield, sorry. You have to go out on your shield on that one. But
and also, one more thing I wanted to put down. Sorry to cut you off again.
No worries.
I'm cutting you off. The knee bar. Do you know first time that the knee bar was actually instituted? It was back in UFC 6, Ken Shamrock versus Kimo Leopoldo. That's the part I wanted to bring in.
Okay. All right. So that's harkening back to our Hawaii. Yes. I got you. All right. So there you have it. Let's go ahead and close the book on these fights and put it on the shelf. This is history. And let's go into our next segment called Finding the Angles. This is Finding the Angles. This is where we look at some of the headlines and talk through some of the headlines that we have for this week. All right, let's get into it. All right, here we go. All right, Mr. John Keyes.
Yes, sir.
So Dana White says that Aljamain Sterling is up there, but he still won't declare him the number one contender
at bantamweight. Why not? That's my question. Why not? What more does this man have to do? He's already okay. So I'm looking here at the stats: 5 wins in a row, one of including performance of the night, where he submitted submitted Corey Sandhagen, a guy that's been on a tear. Mm-hmm. All right, he should be in the position when he sat there and said when he sat there and put Jose Aldo in front of him. Mm-hmm. I was really, really upset with that decision. Okay, I don't care who they put in there. They could have got Royce Gracie to drop down to one to that weight and say, okay, he's gonna fight. That would still be a disgrace. I don't care who you put in there. If you got a guy that has proven himself time and again that he is a better fighter, he's been in there doggedly knocking people out, earning his victories, getting performances of the night. He did everything that Dana White wants fighters to do, and that's go in there and put on a performance. And you still don't name him the number one. What is the issue?
Well, I think that you can't name him the number one contender, but you can name him the next in line, because you still have Marlon Moraes at number one. But I think Aljamain Sterling has done enough to be able to get that next title shot. Because at the end of the day, the beatdown that he put on Corey Sandhagen, who was in that list, you remember when we were going all over this with Henry Cejudo, we had 3 people that should have gotten a title shot after Marlon Moraes Jose Aldo fight. It was Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling, and Corey Sandhagen. Those are the 3 that were right at the top. Then you had Aljamain Sterling and Corey Sandhagen fight. Aljamain won, and and Peter Yan fought Jose Aldo for the title. So of the 3, you have a clear next person in line to fight. And if Dana White won't say that and won't give that to Aljamain Sterling, you got to ask, what is the motivation, and who could you put in front of Aljamain Sterling? Surely not Marlon Moraes in this position.
I bet he does. And if he does that, that tells me there's something personal going on. There's something personal going on between Aljo and Dana White, and that makes me wonder, what is that? Isn't Matt Serra Aljo's trainer? That's Aljo's coach. Matt Serra's supposed to be, and Dana White's supposed to be boys. What's going on?
I don't know. Maybe deeper than that. I don't know. But it's definitely something that I want to keep my eye on. It's worth watching, because at the end of the day, we want to see new blood fighting for the belt. You know, as much as I love Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She's gotten a ton of title shots, and I don't know necessarily that she should have gotten all the ones that she got. I'll take it because that's my girl, but yeah. She has fought for the title a whole lot. Holly Holm has fought for the title a whole lot. You know, when we start thinking about people who get title shots that don't necessarily deserve it, like a Jose Aldo, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, his performance, you know, Peter Yan showed how much better he is than Jose Aldo. I just have to start thinking about these fighters that have worked their way to these positions and are denied these shots, that it's demoralizing and it's unfair. And I really want to start seeing, you know, what happens to, you know, what happens next, because at the end of the day, if Aljamain Sterling is not going to get a title shot at, in the UFC when he's clearly earned it, then maybe he needs to go and start chasing other belts and other promotions.
Okay, just a quick deep dive. I think I see why that he may be doing this. Okay, so Aljamain Sterling is 19-3 right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, he has a loss before he went on his win streak. Guess who that loss is against?
Peter Yan.
Marlon Moraes. But so he's putting that. He's trying. That could be the justification on why he's putting Marlon in front of Aljamain. But I'm like, let those two go back at it. Run it back and see what happens.
I don't know. I think Aljamain has done enough. Marlon Moraes fought for the title. He, even though he's the number one guy, what do you do? What do you do? This is so jacked up. Because if Marlon Moraes really deserved a title shot, then you should have given it to him instead of giving it to Jose Aldo against Peter Yan.
Okay, deeper dive.
Okay.
If you go looking at Marlon's record, the three losses that Aljamain got, Marlon beat those guys. Marlon beat let's see here. It was against Rafael Assunção was one.
Okay.
And I believe it was Jimmy Rivera was the other one. Let me verify that. But yeah, he beat them. And not just beat them. It was split decision with Jimmy and where's Assunção? Yeah, they're both split decisions, but he beat them.
So it sounds like your position is that that Aljamain Sterling does not deserve the title shot that Marlon Moraes does.
Hold on. Let me make sure this is right. No, one of the guys that he beat was Rafael Assunção. The other guy that Aljamain lost against was Brian Caraway. He's not in the pit. Yeah, he's not. Yeah, he lost that back in 2016.
Okay, well that's a long time ago, but still.
Exactly. I mean, but in recent time. Marlon beat Rafael Assunção last year. Okay. Beat him with a guillotine choke. So I don't like it, but I think that's what they're basing it off of, that the people that Aljamain has lost to, Marlon has beat. I don't like that.
This is the problem with the UFC ladder. And it is that now you're looking back and you're digging into a fighter's past and creating justification for why that fighter doesn't need a title shot. Because at the end of the day, it's like, how many fights has Aljamain Sterling won in a row?
Exactly. I agree with you. He has won. He's won five, I believe. It was five in a row. And yeah, Marlon just lost before he beat Jose. He's coming off a loss to Henry Cejudo. So, I mean, I'm in the agreement that Aljamain deserves a fight. What I'm seeing is a possible just a myth, and this is sitting in Dana White's mind, which is a place that you should never do, is sit in somebody else's mind. And I'm looking and seeing what he could say as far as why that we can't give Aljamain his fight. I think it's crap. Okay, to be quite honest, I think it's crap. Aljamain has more than earned his spot. And if he has to go there and beat Marlon out of it, I'm pretty sure he'd be game to do that. just as a justification to get to the title. If Dana White said, you beat Marlon, I'll let you have that title fight. Marlon's on a death note.
Wow. I don't know. Marlon Moraes is a good fighter, though.
Marlon's on a death note. Okay.
I don't know. See, I'm going to be conflicted. Like, I want to see Aljamain Sterling get a title shot, but I don't want to see him get a title shot if he's got to go through Marlon Moraes. Because
I think Aljamain would.
I mean, dude is ranked number one for a reason.
I think Aljamain would be more. That would be the motivation that he would need to go in there and pull a Molly Whoppery on him.
Okay? All right. Well, we will see. We'll keep our ear to the street on that one and see what's going on. The next fight, the next story is Pat Miletich edged out by Michael Nunn in Clash of Legends split decision verdict. Now, why are we talking about Pat Miletich? Pat Miletich is part of the old guard, part of the UFC 1 through 10, if you will. This is a guy that was fighting at the, you know, in kind of that original legacy of the UFC. Now he is fighting, and he fought against Michael Nunn, who was a former IBF middleweight and WBA super middleweight champion. These guys are in their 50s. Why are they fighting?
Isn't that what you've always wanted there? Mr. John Keyes is an old man Legends League.
Yes, the Legends Division. You darn right, the Masters Division. And to correct you, sir, it was UFC 36 was his last fight.
Okay? When did he start? What was his first fight?
Oh, his first fight was like UFC 16.
So
he was there. 16,
that's the point
16,
I was saying, is that he was there at the very beginning of the UFC.
Yeah, he was there.
We're at 252 right now.
Well, I'm just saying, okay, the Master Division is alive and well. I did not want to see him fighting somebody younger, but I'm seeing more and more of these old cats sitting out there still wanting to fight. They got the old lion tooth in them. They get a taste of the iron in the blood when they're sparring. And like, oh, I can still fight. I still want to see them. Juice them up with the good stuff that John Jones has been hitting, okay? And let them go.
Rams.
Allegedly. Okay. But yeah, this is Pat Miletich. He is, if there's an old guard, he is definitely the Iron Shield of it. He's about as tough as nails as they come. So,
well, unfortunately, he lost the fight to Michael Nunn. I saw the walkout video. I didn't actually stay and watch the fight. I watched the walkout video. He looks all of 52. I mean, he doesn't look like the viral young man that he might have been. But here's the thing that really got me. Michael Nunn went to jail and served 199 months. He had a 24-year sentence, and he served 199 months for drug trafficking and was released in February 2019, comes back about a year and a half later, and gets into a ring and fights. It's crazy.
God, love it, man. Hey, at least in mixed martial arts, you're given a chance to fight. You
that what a 14 year training camp,
dude. I bet he did a lot of push ups and pull ups.
Hey, all upper body, no leg days whatsoever, man. Okay,
that's rough. I'm going on. Speaking of leg days, it's really not. I just decided to go leg days as opposed to upper body for the Valentina Shevchenko story. So she says she doesn't care if Amanda Nunes retires before they have a trilogy bout. I don't know why they would even have a trilogy bout. Like, Amanda Nunes is 2-0. Why do they need to fight a trilogy bout? I know that Valentina Shevchenko is the only person that can give Amanda Nunes a run for her money. But, you know, the fact is that Valentina Shevchenko has 125 on lockdown. Amanda Nunes has 135 and 145 on lockdown. Should the two meet anymore, as far as I'm concerned. So I support Valentina Shevchenko in saying, so what if she leaves? I got my own division.
Okay. You want this one, KC? Does somebody want to let Ryan know the reason why? Okay. So, Ryan. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little. I'm going to give you a little story. Once upon a time, there was these two fighters, and
It's just they John didn't like Jones each other. And John Jones and Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, we'll call them that. I wasn't gonna bring up their names, but since you want to bring up their names, we'll call them that. Okay, and they have this torrid love hate affair that when two fighters, and I've seen this in anime a lot, that when two fighters of equal level are charged and they combat each other, and they're so focused that they are bonded. Okay, hold on, it's not over yet. All right, so. We don't see this with Amanda Nunes as Valentina Shevchenko. They don't have this bonded technique. One, they're like, you could go ahead and go your own way. We've already fought. We've done the two and oh. You're clearly the better fighter. Go along. They don't have that animosity that John Jones and Daniel Cormier have and will forever have. I guarantee. One's gonna be in heaven, the other one's gonna be in that other place, and one of them's gonna be like, "Hey, Pootie, you there?" Okay, he's gonna be like, "Yeah, I'm still here. What's up?" And they're gonna be like, "You suck," and that's how it's gonna be.
Well, if we're playing our greatest hits here, I'm just gonna say that there should be a fighters union.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
You bring up the John Jones thing. I vehemently disagree. I don't think that there really is the level of animosity that you believe is there because, yeah, they hated each other, but there's so much more life that's going on. And you got to figure out Cormier is fighting for his legacy at this point, and John Jones really isn't a huge part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's a heavyweight.
So, I just don't know how we get to John Jones and Daniel Cormier from Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes. I mean,
because they want to say that they're both those four fighters have a similarity with each other, and they don't. Okay, and just to counter mind you, Casey, how many conversations have John Jones and Daniel Cormier have had that did not mention the other in one form or another, not necessarily stating names?
Why are we even talking about this?
I don't know. That's the beauty of it. They don't bring it up. The interviewers don't bring it up. They bring it up. You listen to Daniel Cormier and see how many times he talks about John at least once. And this comes for two guys that do not watch the Daniel Cormier's interviews.
I watch him with Ariel Helwani regularly.
And I promise you,
every time that Jones' names come up, it's because Ariel goaded him into that.
Yeah, well, and since we're bringing up our greatest hits, Ring Girls shouldn't exist. So,
Oh, where's George at? Okay, so,
I'm still trying to find the segue. I mean, we have just jumped. We have jumped the shark so much right now where it's like Valentina Shevchenko says, I don't really care if Amanda Nunes leaves. I've got my own space. John Jones and Daniel Cormier, though, it's like, wait, what are you doing?
Because like, they're trying to make a – don't you see the similarities there?
Nobody's they're making that – zero people are making the connection to John Jones and Daniel Cormier with Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes. There is zero animosity between them.
Of course, there's zero. But see, they want that energy there. And they don't need it. They're two professional level fighters that don't need that. And that's why they can go away. They could walk away from each other,
okay.
Give each other a high five, and be like, you're the woman. And like, no, you're the woman. And they go on their own ways.
So just so that I can get this straight.
Yeah,
we're talking about the fact that Amanda Nunes might retire, and Valentina Shevchenko is like, I don't care, I have my own division. And what you're saying is that anybody who's talking about this fight potentially wants the type of animosity that exists between John Jones and Daniel Cormier.
Exactly.
No, people just want to see a great fight. Like no one has challenged Amanda Nunes. There's only two people that have really challenged Amanda Nunes since she's been in the UFC.
There's only been two people that's ever challenged John Jones in the UFC.
No, Daniel Cormier ain't that guy, though.
But Alexander Gustafsson, what?
Alexander Gustafsson is not named Daniel Cormier.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, you're saying that two people ever challenged Amanda Nunes.
The point is that there are two people who ever really challenged Amanda Nunes. One is Jermaine Durandamy, and Jermaine didn't really have any takedown defense, and so it wasn't really a fight. The other one was Valentina Shevchenko, who took the fight all the way to the distance.
Okay.
People want to see a good fight. They want to see Amanda Nunes challenged, but it's not. No one's trying to create this story about Amanda Nunes and Shevchenko having this secret.
Amanda Nunes versus Cyborg, personally.
Okay, Cyborg only lasted, didn't even last a round, right? I mean, so you can't say this.
So the question is, why was this question brought up if they didn't want them to have like this potential energy?
Because Valentina Shevchenko is running roughshod all over the 125-pound division. The 135 is held down by Amanda Nunes, and Valentina Shevchenko took Amanda Nunes to a decision. It was a competitive fight. People want to see Amanda Nunes challenge, but they're not trying to create some type of...
So you're saying that Daniel Cormier isn't... Basically, he's roughshodding people in his division.
Hold on.
So you said that he's not roughshodding. Then you have John Jones, who is in his division, and he's pretty much lord and dominion over that, if you hear from him. And you're saying that they don't give each other a challenging fight.
Let's see. The first fight was 5-0, John Jones. The second fight was a head kick knockout, John Jones. So as far as I'm concerned, and I would believe that Daniel Cormier would agree with me, the fights ain't been competitive.
Okay, because for the simple fact that Daniel Cormier is that type of competitive person that will fight to the end, okay? If he said, all right, you and John Jones, one more time, here is the number. I guarantee if the numbers was if it was 100 pennies, I guarantee they would probably go for it again.
No, I don't think they would, but go ahead, Kelechi.
Yeah, I think what's bigger here is that we're drawing an unfair comparison between the Shevchenko's and Nunes fight versus the John Jones and Cormier fight. I think that all the fighters there have done enough to solidify their own legacy apart from each other, and that this is a unnecessary comparison when we could just stay in the story of Nunes and say, is this a fight that makes sense for either of them, or why should it tarnish the other's legacy if Nunes retires? And I think that there's a storyline to be had within just that women's division of a champ that was so dominant that there really doesn't seem to be anyone to challenge her. And having another champ that is also so dominant that there doesn't seem to be anyone else to challenge her.
Am I the only one hearing that?
You literally are the only one hearing it. Because
man,
at the
hit
end of
my
the...
music, then.
Oh my gosh.
God.
Yes. See, we should. I wouldn't have been so outraged if you had hit your music at the very beginning of your outlandish response.
I'm telling y'all, y'all sat there and doubted me the first time. I don't know why y'all doubt me now. Still animosity.
I'm doubting you because this has nothing to do with Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko. That there is no animosity between them.
That's none. The difference. That's
so
the
there
difference
is nothing to do with
two.
It.
But the storyline that you gave, the only difference between the John Jones and Daniel Cormier and Shevchenko and Nunes was that you were talking about women, but if you took the pronoun out, you could have been talking about either one. Okay? You really need to take the pronoun out and restate that story, and I guarantee you'll understand what I'm saying. Let's move along. Goodness.
I'm looking at you side-eyed. For those people who are listening, so for those people who are listening to the podcast, just know that I am looking at John Keys the way you're looking at the radio right now.
I'm judging.
We are all judging you. Whatever, you know. You're looking at the speaker, whatever it is, you're looking at whatever it is you're looking at while you're listening to this podcast. I share your incredulousness. There's your SAT word.
Incredulous. With you. Let's look this one up. We are slipping on that. Incredulous.
There you go. All right. So what you should have done, Mr. Keys,
I'm listening.
Is saved your Daniel Cormier John Jones story for our next one, which is where Habib gave Justin Gaethje the green light to fight Conor McGregor while he's out. And Justin Gaethje said, no, I'm going to wait.
What that got to do with, oh, goodness. Incredulous of a person or their manner, unwilling or unable to believe something.
That's right.
And this has been your SAT moment tonight.
So Justin Gaethje had, you know, could have gone to see if he could make the Conor McGregor fight work. And you know, Habib was like, listen, I'm going to be out. So maybe you should fight the red panty fight instead of fighting me. And Justin Gaethje said, no, I'm going to wait. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you have waited, or would you have gone to see if you couldn't get Conor McGregor in the octagon?
Conor McGregor is too much of a hassle. I don't understand like the lore. Like, I think it is going to be a big payday for you, but if you have a chance to line yourself up for the title, then I think more and more we're starting to see a relevance come back to the belt because you have more opportunities. So for me personally, I'm going after the belt first and then payday later, because Conor's going to be chasing that belt to prove his relevance. You're going to get the payday here or now or later. It makes more sense to get the belt first and then you get a locked in payday.
I think that's fair. If the Conor McGregor versus Justin Gaethje fight is there, then if you get the belt from Khabib Nurmagomedov, that fight is still there. Actually, it's probably more valuable now when you have the belt than when you don't. It's just that good luck getting that belt from Khabib Nurmagomedov,
right?
I think if you're looking, it depends on how you want to define your legacy. If you want to define your legacy as I was there to get paid, you go after McGregor. But if you want to sit there and define your legacy as I went in there to become a human highlight reel and to kick butt and chew bubble gum and I ran out of bubble gum a long time ago, then you go after the title. It's an honor play, and I'm all about that. Hey, if Gaethje's like, hey, I'll wait. Okay, I don't care how long I gotta wait. I'll wait. Good. That's hey, I can respect that. You know, that means you're willing to put your honor above the money. I'm good.
He may have to wait a long time though, and so according to Daniel Cormier, he said it's gonna take a lot of strength for Habib to ever return back to the octagon. Habib doesn't. People are saying Habib's gonna fight this year, but Daniel Cormier says, I don't know. His dad was the world to him, and having that void in his life is something that's going to take a long time to come back from. So my question for you is, there was the greatest a fighter that was on track to become the greatest heavyweight boxer of all time. Mm-hmm. Gentleman by the name of Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. When he lost Customato, his career spiraled out of control.
Yes.
So, assuming that Khabib Nurmagomedov's father was his Customato, is this representing something that could be a turning point for Khabib Nurmagomedov's perfect 28-0 record?
Yes. It can be. You could look at it one of two ways. With Habib, do you think he is that it can either damage him or it can embolden him? If it damages him, he's never going to be the fighter that he was ever again, and he should just retire on top. If it emboldens him, if he fights for the honor of his father, then he has turned into something that is way more dangerous than what he was beforehand. It's a 50-50.
I just don't know what more there is for him to gain. He's beaten Conor McGregor. He's held the title. There's not a lot much more that he needs to accomplish. He's a well-known name within Russia. Like, to me, your legacy is cemented. You're going through a hard thing in life. For some people, the honor is to be able to come back and show that you're mentally strong. But in this particular case, there's not much benefit. You're already champion. It's not like you're coming back to make one last run.
I mean, that's fair. I think it's fair. He may not have much left to fight for. I think he's got to fight the Gaethje fight. His goal was to get to 30-0. So maybe I think he can go two more, and then start looking at how does he build on that Nurmagomedov legacy back in Russia. You know, take the gym to new heights and bring the next generation of fighters from Dagestan to the UFC and beyond. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So I'm very, very, very curious as to how he's going to react to not having, you know, the single biggest, you know, person in his life in his corner, having his back. You know, that's going to be interesting. Speaking of being, having someone in your corner, Gilbert Burns is going to be cornering this weekend, one of his teammates. And, you know, he is very happy because he's got his test back for COVID-19. And he's negative. So he is good to go to fight Kamaru Usman for the welterweight title. I think it's going to be a good fight. I like that fight whenever they booked it. I can't wait for them to find a time for them to do that.
Yeah, it will be at least 6 months.
Yeah, because Usman is out for 6 months.
Yes.
Daniel Cormier said that he fumbled really bad last time. I agree that he fumbled really bad. And so, you know, it's... He's trying to make up for it by going out on top against Stipe Miocic. Now, John, this might be a great opportunity to bring up rivalries in Daniel Cormier.
I'm reading through right now.
Oh, so now we don't want to talk John Jones.
We don't want to talk John Jones and Daniel Cormier.
Hold on. We could talk John Jones and Daniel Cormier because he always says this when he lost the fight, that he made mistakes and he will make adjustments. This is nothing new. The thing about it is Daniel Cormier actually does try to make adjustments. We're not going to see the same Daniel Cormier that fought Stipe. He may sit there, as far as we know, he may still be punching the pad and it's got John Jones' face on it and Stipe Miocic's body. You know, it could be something obsessive like that. We don't know. I'm not an AKA. I can't see this. But I will say that he will
come from.
Hey, I just can't believe that you two cannot see that John Jones and Daniel Cormier have a low key love hate relationship with each other.
Cormier is retiring.
You act like that stops something. Okay.
I just think you act like it stops something.
Okay.
You know, I think John Keys has the love-hate relationship with Daniel Cormier and John Jones.
It's not. Like, it's you
that have the jilted girlfriend relationship.
No. That is the fact that you two cannot see this boggles my mind, and I'm gonna be messed up for the rest of the week thinking about this now. Okay, how is it that y'all cannot see this blatant?
Here's what I can see in this matchup.
What's that?
Is a more competitive fight. Is one where it's 1-1 instead of 2-0.
Yeah.
So the Cormier versus Stipe fight is far more attractive because they're 1-1 on this. Not only that, Stipe really did the homework to figure out where Cormier had his weakness, and that body shot was devastating. And to be able to see those adjustments, this makes for a far more intriguing fight than even John Jones coming up to heavyweight to fight to end out the Cormier's career. Like, there's too many caveats here. Whereas this is a straight up Cormier is as a heavyweight. He was the champ. Like, this is a better storyline than even the John Jones thing. Because John Jones would merge Cormier as a heavyweight.
Like, I mean, I agree that this is a better story because of the players involved. We have two honorable men that is involved in this. And, you know, that it's just like, I'm kind of interested to see how this unfolds. However, we are in the minority because I do believe that the fan, that the casual John Jones fans would love to see him go up to heavyweight and finish off Cormier once and for all.
The thing is, I don't think that John Jones has fans left.
You know, he is. You know who his fans are? His haters. Team? His haters. His haters love him more than his fans do. You know that, right? If you hate everything he does, but you still follow him, you are still a fan. All right. Madonna said that.
John Jones is quickly falling into the Kanye West camp for me.
Wow. Those are strong words.
He's following. He's been there with me, for me for quite some time, dude. I can't.
What happened to the duality of the human experience that you guys were talking about a few weeks ago?
Yeah, those dualities are called
exist. They exist, and we still acknowledge it. We just ain't got to like it.
All right.
My thing with John Jones right now is he really is exhibiting signs of being bipolar, and his addiction habits are not helping him. And so while he has these lucid moments, we also just have to be very keenly aware that a lot of his Twitter responses are indicative of a manic episode. And so I, as a fan, am not going to continue to support a fighter. Like, he is quickly going down the same road that we saw with Platinum Mike Perry, where it's like, all right, he got this win and everyone gets the pressure off of him. And as soon as he's back in normal life, he screws everything up. Like, maybe we should focus on mental health a little bit more within this sport.
I think that's fair. I think that's a good point. I want to go to, I'm going to skip 33 and go straight to 34. George St. Pierre explains why he wanted to be the first to beat perfect fighter Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think that, you know, to go back to our previous conversation, I think that's his 30th fight. I think he gets through Justin Gaethje, goes 29-0, and then brings up a fight against George St. Pierre for his 30th, and then goes out. There you go.
It's a weird way to end your career, but it's also like two wrestlers going at it. We're about to see a wrestling minute.
Yeah, but the thing is that George St. Pierre is also, a karate fighter, right? And so, you know, that karate base that he has and his gymnastics that he does, and there's something about George St. Pierre that gives him a mystique that the only person that I would like to see go after that is Khabib Nurmagomedov. And maybe Khabib has to fight at 165, or maybe...
I was going to say that weight cut's going to be too much.
But at the same time, I would rather see a 165 catchweight, or even see Khabib fight at 170 in his last fight, and it be that big fight versus George St. Pierre versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. So I think it's very kind of George St. Pierre to call Khabib Nurmagomedov a perfect fighter. I mean, he is perfect from his record, but, you know, I think George St. Pierre has a lot to say about, like, you know, what a good fighter is and what would make an interesting fight for him. I think that the fight versus Michael Bisping was one that was an opportunistic one that he took advantage of. But this is a fight that I think George St. Pierre has something to lose, and I think that's what makes it very interesting.
I agree.
Let's go to the fight card. Let's go to the fight card and look at the fights that are happening this weekend. All right, this time it really is the fight card. This is where we look at the fights coming up this weekend. Not like at the beginning of the show where the person who made the run sheet screwed it up. So,
we're just going to call it Ron Burgundy, and we're going to leave it at that.
I totally get Ron Burgundy. So, UFC on ESPN, I think this is 15, right? Whitaker versus Till, Saturday, July 25th, 2020, at the Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. We have five fights on the card. We are going to make three picks, and that's going – actually, yeah, three picks for this one. So, Paul Craig versus go ahead and say that one, Kelechi.
Gazimerov Antiglov.
Very good. I don't know how to say it. Gazimerov Antiglov. Gazimerov Antiglov. There you go. We'll go with that. Right. We'll test it later. See how it goes.
I'll just call him that dude.
GA. Gaga. Yeah. Let's see. You got Carla, the Cookie Monster, Esparza versus Maria Rodriguez. Fabricio Werdum is welcoming Alexander Gustafsson to the heavyweight division. So we're going to see. You know, we know how things go when lighter fighters go to heavier divisions. It's usually not a great idea, but we're going to see what happens there. Mauricio Shogun Hua versus Antonio Rogério Nogueira. That's Little Nog in the co-main event. And then, in the main event of the evening, Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till. Darren Till being one of the few fighters who moved up in weight and saw some success. So, let's pick three fights. We're going to pick Fabricio Werdum versus Alexander Gustafsson. John Keyes, who you got?
Man, that's such a good fight. Oh, God. Those top three fights are just so good. I'm gonna go with Gustafsson. I think he could be a problem at a heavier weight. I really do. And they say that it's been alleged that Gustafsson did beat Jones. So we could kind of say this might be a prototype fight for if Jones ever jumped up to the next level.
All right, Kelechi.
I got to go Gustafsson here. I just think his hand speed is still going to be better than Fabricio. And I just got to believe that he's going to look a lot more fresh. Fabricio, as he gets older, is starting to be really slow and really not a very agile fighter, which I think Alexander can take advantage of unless he gets taken to the ground.
Well, and I think that's the key thing for Fabricio Werdum is if Fabricio Werdum can get this grappling against the cage and get this fight on the ground, I think it's Fabricio Werdum all day. I think that Alexander Gustafsson, in his second fight with John Jones, once the fight got to the ground, there was not much he could do. And so I like Fabricio Werdum because he's a heavier fighter, because this is his weight class and Alexander Gustafsson is moving up. And what I've seen is very rarely does a fighter move up from a lighter weight class to a heavier one and see instant success. There's usually, you usually want to have kind of a tune-up fight before you start fighting the big dogs. I consider Fabricio Werdum a big dog, even if he is getting a little old. So I like Fabricio Werdum in this fight, and we'll see what happens. All right, co-main event, Mauricio Shogun Hua versus Antonio Nogueira. Kelechi, who you got?
I got Little Nog in this one. Can't really explain why other than Little Nog.
John Keyes.
Oh, my pride days. Oh, my goodness. This is a pride fight, minus the soccer kick. Yeah, this is a Masters Division fight. These two have been fighting for since probably longer than most of our viewers have been alive. I'm going with Mauricio Shogun. I'm gonna see what he does.
All right. I'm not super excited about this fight. I mean, I know that it has a lot of history, but these fighters, they're not relevant other than the fact that they have a lot of history in the sport and they're to be respected because of what they've accomplished in their careers. But the fact is that this fight really isn't relevant, and I don't understand why it's a co-main event fight. But to make a pick, I'm going to go with Shogun Hua. I haven't seen Little Nog fight in a really long time. Shogun Hua has fought more recently, and he still could bring the pain. So I like him in this fight, and we'll see what happens on Saturday night. In the main event of the evening, you got Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till. Darren Till says Robert Whittaker cannot strike with him. Robert Whittaker has been known as a well-rounded fighter, bringing it all to the ring. So who do you got, Kelechi Onyebuchi?
I want Robert Whittaker to win, hands down, but I really believe that Darren Till is going to bring it, and I hate that.
All right, John Keyes.
I'll second Kelechi. As much as I think Robert should win, Darren's going to beat him.
Yeah, I think Robert Whittaker is the nicer guy and the guy that I would, I think is probably more respectable. But Darren Till is a beast at 185, and it's shocking how big and strong he is. I think Darren Till is going to probably get a knockout in this. I'm scared about the potential of what Darren Till represents in this division.
I think it's a good play. I mean, if you saw him at 170, he always looked so gaunt, and I was just like, dude, eat a sandwich. But you know, at 185, he's filled out, and I mean, honestly, I think he can go up to 205 and be a problem, to be quite honest.
He just got the UFC's biggest problem at 205.
Exactly.
Wait till the dragon goes away. Wait till John Jones leaves the premises before going up to 205. All right, so follow us on social media. On Instagram, I'm at Combat Sports Talk.
Go ahead, KC.
And I am at Push Pull Prey on Instagram.
And I'm at Keys to Victory.
All right, well, that's with an ES, right?
Yeah, that's with an ES. Thank you.
All right, and George is at Darkside_MMA_. We didn't get a visit by the coach tonight, so that's unfortunate. You can find our website at www.combatsportstalk.com. We have all of our archives, and you are able to find us on anywhere you want to find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Just look up here. This is all the places where you can find. You should point to your right, Kelechi. There you go. Yes, that's where you can find our podcast. You can definitely find it anywhere you wanna find podcasts. Shout out to MMA Junkie, MMA Fighting, MMA Mania, Bloody Elbow, and the Intelligent Defense Discussion Group. That's where we get our stories and start our discussions. And so those are the ones we use on the show. On behalf of John Keyes and Kelechi Onyebuchi, this is Ryan Smith reminding you to keep your hands up, your chin tucked, and throw bombs. We'll catch you next time.